talking sports in the afternoon. This is the Big Show on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
We don't see a very good pitcher or two good pitchers there. So, you know, there's a lot of baseball left. And we know it's not over until you get that fourth game. And these guys aren't going to change here. They're going to go out there and grind it out.
World Series continues tonight. That's Bruce Bochy of San Francisco. Yordano Ventura versus Jake Peavy on the mound tonight. This one's a little crazy in the sense that Kansas City comes back trailing in this series. The Giants have an ability here to win their third World Series in, what, the last 5 years? Or
yep,
six?
Third
and five. Yet, there is an... in terms of what's been written, in terms of the media conversation, there has been probably... almost more, in a way, Pat, talked about what could happen if there is a Game 7 than what possibly could happen here. That, you know, you get into the whole conversation about, you know, Madison.
We were just talking about Nolan Baumgartner,
great Kamloops
former Blazer. Former Kamloops Blazer.
Yeah, former teammate of Ryan Rashog's as well. Madison Baumgartner. You know, a lot of conversation about that and who Kansas City might throw and all of those things. And, you know, Kansas City's the team that can do it. And statistically, historically, there is a case to be made.
Right.
But there is a game to be played here tonight.
Well, yeah. I mean, the Royals were able to light up Jake Peavy in game two, but they've got to get their bats going. They've got to bounce back from what was a dominant pitching performance in game five. And they've got to do something they haven't done all playoffs, and I know they had the one-game playoffs, but truly, throughout the actual postseason,
right,
they haven't faced elimination. They've got to battle back. They've got to get up off the mat and punch back, and we don't know if they're going to be able to do so. Look, the Giants aren't here by accident.
No.
The Giants don't win 2-4 and be in a third World Series in 5 years by some fluke. They're a hell of a baseball team. They are playoff hardened. They have got one of the best managers of this era kind of at the helm right now and leading them through. This is a Giants team that is extremely, extremely deserving to be where they are. However, the one thing I like about Kansas City and the thing that they proved to me in Game 2 of this World Series is that they do have that ability to bounce back. They do have that ability to compartmentalize, and they can put things behind them. And so because of that, I think that there's a pretty good chance they could win Game 6. They're back on home field. The best part about it for KC is they're not down 3-2 and going to the Bay Area. They're not going back to San Fran needing to win 2 and needing a win here to extend their life. They're going back to KC in their building with that group of fans and that atmosphere. They've got a chance to extend this series. So I think they've got a great chance of pushing it to 7. I think they've got a great chance of letting this thing go the distance. If it gets to Game 7, then all those permutations come out. Do you go back to Baumgartner on short rest? Do you do the Royals think about making a pitching change in very much
they
the
might
same
throw
way?
Nolan Baumgartner.
Maybe they'll go with Ryan Rashog.
The options are endless.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The Game 7 scenarios are so fascinating, but you got to get there first. But I do think, I don't think Kansas City is a write-off tonight. I think they've got a great chance of forcing a seventh game here.
What about stealing bases? Remember how that was kind of the overriding theme for Kansas City, and so much was made about, particularly early on, but even coming into this series, that I believe the Royals had stolen 12 bases coming into this series, and everybody else in the postseason had stolen 15 combined. Really, you know, whether or not, even they took that series against the San Francisco that Kansas City swept in August, they stole 8 on 9 attempts. Has that even been a story in this?
Nowhere near as much of a story, yeah. I wonder, you know, being in this spot where you're almost in that nothing-to-lose kind of category, how does Ned Yost approach this game tonight?
Well, history would suggest to us...
Last time he was in a nothing-to-lose scenario.
Caution to the wind,
right?
Hey, have at her, boys.
Yeah, I'll throw 1,000 down on black. Let's see what happens.
Whatever you want to do. Could be crazy.
I'm looking forward to it. And the fact that it's back in Kansas City just lends it to even more of that drama.
Yeah, you know, that's true.
That game against Oakland happened in Kansas City. I'm looking forward to this. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. And I'm hoping the Royals are able to force a Game 7. I think they've got a good shot of forcing a Game 7. It's not as if Jake Peavy comes in as an ace-quality pitcher. It's a bit of a drop from Bumgarner to Peavy.
Oh, yeah.
And the Royals have got an opportunity to maybe exploit that tonight.
8 of the last 10 teams to come home trailing 3-2 in the World Series have won Game 6 and 7. That includes the 85 Royals, which now we're talking about, you know, spanning with 3 or 4 decades. I don't know how you connect one to the other than, you know, they're all in that group. You know, the home team has won 3 straight Game 6s. If you like, here's San Francisco, are 1-4 all-time in World Series Game 6s on the road. There's a lot. I guess maybe this is where all that fascination about what Game 7 could possibly look like. You know, I don't, do you see it that way?
Do I see what way? Like,
well, it just, I mean, is that why we're talking all about this Game 7? Because of all these numbers that point to, and again,
I think
those are past. That's,
I think we're talking about Game 7 just because the Royals have been such a resilient group throughout. They haven't really had to show resiliency in a series, but in some of their games, they've had to be very resilient. Because the Royals are this upstart group,
yeah,
and this feel-good story, I think we all want to see it go 7 games, because I think most people want the Royals to win. Most people who aren't Giants fans, most people outside the Bay Area, are probably hoping KC comes away with a victory.
It's just a better story, right?
It's a much better story.
Yeah.
Look, San Fran is a great team, and they're a tough team to dislike, but when they're going up against, and here's the one thing I said during the 1 o'clock hour, Kansas City is a feel-good story, but at the same time, they're no longer a feel-good story, or they're more than a feel-good story. Like, they're legit for being in Game 6 of the World Series.
Yeah.
For as much as that Oakland win was great, and for as much as it was a great story that they're back in the playoffs for the first time since 1985, they still won 8 consecutive playoff games. They still swept 2 really good American League teams.
Yeah.
Like, they belong here. So, yeah, 2014 will go down as the heartwarming Royals, but it'll also go down as one of the most dominant playoff runs we've seen in a lot of years before they ran into a very good San Francisco Giants team.
Ah, but if they don't win. If they don't win.
What do you think if they don't win? I was either Will or Josh who asked me this on 3 Burning Questions.
You know what?
I'll always remember this.
You
year.
Will, eh?
Yeah. It's just, it's unprecedented. It's the Royals for the first time in 29 years. Look, I think, well, I still remember the Oilers in their run to the Stanley Cup Final in Game 7. And obviously, we still remember the Flames in 2004. I think 2014, for me, will be remembered as the year the Royals got there.
We do because they were very close to us, right? And I'm trying to think of a better example. You remember when Colorado, the Rockies, went on their run?
Yeah, in 07 or whatever it was.
Right.
Holiday and, yeah.
Fun? Do you still remember that?
But did it have the same type of mystique
No, it didn't. I grant you that.
Because we've got these lasting images. Like, we've got that lasting image of this epic marathon game in a wild card playoff between Oakland and Kansas City. We've got these great Moustakas' home runs,
yep,
and we've got all these moments that the Royals have been able to give us. That building and how loud it's been, the way the entire city rallied around it. I think for me, it'll be tough to forget the 2014 postseason and what the Royals have done. Mostly because this probably isn't going to happen again for a number of years. No, I don't think that we think the Royals are, look, the Royals will be good next year, but do we think they're going back to the World Series bar none next year? I don't know if a lot of people do.
Okay, wait, which is, you mean which won't happen next year? The Royals or this kind of story?
Both.
Well, this kind of story is beginning to run out. I'm not sure how many of these are around,
yeah,
right?
That's very true. But, you know the fact that there's, you know, will the Royals be back in the World Series next year? Yeah, maybe, but probably not.
Yeah. Yeah.
And just, so this will kind of be one of those outlier years, I think. I think this will be a year where, like, always remember the 2014 Kansas City.
It's a fascinating question, Pat, and I wonder about the answer, because my immediate gut says if they don't win, no, because you very rarely do you ever remember the bridesmaid, right? You very rarely do you remember the runner up. The Bills, I guess, would be the example of where you absolutely do remember them because of, you know, 4 straight. But I'm just trying to think of it. You know, the Calgary example, we lived that. And Edmonton was, we had to kind of live, because, you know, around that. Ottawa, I'm not sure Ottawa resonates with, you know, casual hockey observers the same way in 07, right? That's not even that, because they've been a good team for a while, and they kind of earned their right to go there. This is kind of off the map,
haven't been there
in a long time.
I wonder how much Calgary's run in 04 resonates elsewhere. Like, for instance, in Vancouver or Toronto, like, do people remember the 04 Flames run?
I doubt it.
Was so out of nowhere. And I guess the Oilers were pretty up, but the Flames are so out of nowhere. Like, they hadn't made the playoffs
Calgary had already done
years.
It when Edmonton did it, right?
Right.
You know, it was kind of the same kind of path, you know, a lower-seeded team, and it knocked off some pretty good teams. It's hard for me to say. But I doubt it. I doubt very much it resonates.
Yeah. It's interesting conversation. I think for me, and I don't know if this is everybody, but for me, I'll definitely remember the 2014 Kansas City Royals.
Well, I'll ask you about it. I'll continue to stay on top of you. You know, 4 or 5 years down the road.
I hope we're not working together in four or five years.
I don't blame you. Sportsnet 960, The Fan, CIR Realty are teaming up to salute local minor hockey heroes in the community. Do you know someone who is a champion in the hockey community who goes above and beyond for the kids and their team? Then nominate them now and have them recognized for their heroism. Help us celebrate one deserving volunteer from each hockey association in Calgary as minor hockey hero. Submit your nomination now at sportsnet.ca/960. Calgary taking on the Montreal Canadiens. A few thoughts on that as well. The Los Angeles Kings find themselves in an interesting cap crunch. Hope we have some time for that. Also, got to give a little love to the Calgary Stampeders, who are getting set to take on the Winnipeg Blue Bombers coming up on Saturday. It's Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
It's your game. It's our passion. Proud to be home for the National Hockey League in Calgary. Sportsnet 960, The Fan. Talking Calgary Stampeders football in the afternoon. This is the Big Show on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
I want to let my body determine. I know the coaches are 100% down with me playing as much as I want, and they want me to. I'm fine with that. So, I mean, if I get the chance to play, I'll play.
John Cornish talking to the media today after stepping out of the lineup this past week in the game against the Saskatchewan Roughriders. Cornish saying he is willing to play in the last two games. It's really come down to this. The Stampeders believe they have 4 games left. 2 in the regular season, the West Division Final, and then, of course, they're counting on making the Grey Cup. John Cornish has been in and out of the lineup all year. I hearken back to our conversations way back at the beginning of July when he was knocked out. Well, I guess it was June, quite honestly, the first game against the Montreal Alouettes when he was knocked out of that game. And at that point, Pat, I think, you know, we all have the same opinion that this season was about one thing, and that was about, you know, being in BC at the end of November and winning a Grey Cup. Whether or not John Cornish played 5 games, 10 games, 18 games, didn't matter, as long as he was healthy for the last one.
Yeah.
Very curious to see how much he plays here against Winnipeg and then in BC.
Yeah, and, you know, if he is managed and if they just go easy on him in the final 2 games of the season, I don't think anybody's going to have an objection, because you're right. All that matters right now, and this goes back to our conversation from last week getting set for the Riders game.
Yep.
Everything the Stampeders do has got to be with an eye towards November 23rd. And I believe it is. I absolutely believe it is. And we talked on Monday, yesterday, about the Stampeders kind of emphatically putting their foot down in the fourth quarter on Friday night and scoring the 25 points they did to beat the Riders. Well, I think that the decision to keep playing and to keep pushing and so on and so forth, I think that was with an eye to November 23rd. Everything has got to be with that in mind right now. And when it comes to managing your players, your strategy in games, who you're dressing on your 42, all of that type of stuff, it's all got to be with that in mind. And that's seemingly the way it is right now, because that really is the only game that matters at this point.
Glenn Love, special teams player of the week. What's up with that? He's not named John Cornish.
Well, John Cornish doesn't typically win the special teams.
Yeah, but he usually wins most things, doesn't he?
And they don't. I don't think he's. Has he won a Defensive Player of the Week award?
I believe he did. I believe he did.
He might have won a couple early in the year.
He had a 4-sack game, didn't John Cornish?
Look, John Cornish wins the Canadian Player of the Week even when he's not playing in many eyes. But good for Glenn Love. I love that.
It looks like Winnipeg going to come in with Drew Willey as the starter.
Why? That is the most confusing of the decisions. Guy got sacked 10 times against the BC Lions. The guy is having such an issue staying upright. We talked to Kirk Penton of the Winnipeg Sun yesterday. He says, guys, I see a lot of comparisons to, you know, Buck Pierce in the way. And when you hear that, you're like, oh, no. Because Drew Willey's got so many positives. He's the least of their problems right now. Yep. But why put him out there in the final game of the year? There is absolutely nothing to play for right now.
They're done. They got the final bye week.
They play one more game and then they get a bye week.
Could you imagine if they won this division?
No kidding. And then they had to 2 weeks off. In a lot of ways, maybe the schedule makers knew that they would potentially finish the year with a 9-game losing streak. But I don't understand why they're putting Drew Willey in, knowing that he is their meal ticket going forward, and knowing that he's already had enough problems staying upright, and he's already taken an absolute beating this year. Their offensive line is worse this year than it was last year. Why are they putting him in harm's way? If this is another situation, then sure, play him. But knowing the actual logistics of how bad their O-line is and how much in danger he is, I wouldn't put him out there at all.
Well, and if you consider what we, you know, what we've come away with this season is this understanding that, you know, to be truly a successful team in the CFL, you've got to have two guys that you can play.
Mm-hmm.
And you know Drew Willey can play. So split up the game between the other two guys. Get it going now. Get that competition started. You know that the Stampeders are going to have starters in there. You know the Stampeders are going to be chomping at the bit. This won't be like a preseason game. This should really, if nothing else, maybe it tells you, you know, if you got to go out and get two brand new guys to back up Willey.
It speaks towards that conversation we had in relation to the Riders. You need good quarterback depth.
And that's what I'm talking about.
If Brian Brohm and who, I don't even know who their number three guy is off the top of my head, but if you get them into game action and you get some more evaluation time with them and say, you know what, maybe these guys aren't as good as we'd like them to be, well then, you can go in a different direction. It just seems like a curious decision, all things considered. And it's not as if they're going up against the Ottawa Red Blacks here. They're going up against the CFL's best team in the Calgary Stampeders, and no Charleston Hughes, they still have got a pretty furious pass rush. They still get off after the quarterback. Yep. They've still got a nice front four. So, odd decision to start Drew Willey at quarterback this weekend.
Calgary and Montreal here at the Dome tonight. I want to come back and talk about that game in a couple of minutes. Just a couple other things from around, actually, the Pacific Division. The Oilers have won four in a row. Ben Scrivens shut out last night against this Montreal club. He was second star of the week in the National Hockey League, took a lot of scrutiny early on, has bounced back rather nicely. The Oilers, so which Oilers do we believe in now? Do we believe in the team that started the season, or do we believe in the one that's played the last couple of weeks, or the last week or so?
I guess I don't think that they were as bad as they were there. I certainly don't think they're as good as their results speak to right now.
Somewhere in the middle lies the truth?
Probably. And that is a non-playoff team somewhere in that mix. I don't believe they're a lottery team, but I also don't believe they're a playoff team when they play to their capability. To me, this four-game winning streak could be a little misrepresentative just because they've been outshot in all four games. They've had to rely too heavily on Ben Scrivens, and so because of that, and they haven't beaten a Western Conference team in that run. Because of that, I don't know how sustainable it is. What it's done is, and this is important, what it's done is salvage the month of October, which is what they needed to do. So however they did it, they've salvaged the first month of the season. This time last year, their season was over. You know, right now they're at .500. They're not a complete also-ran. They're not a complete joke when you take a look at their record. So I don't think that this type of hockey and them winning four in a row is necessarily representative of the type of team they are. I just think that, you know, they're a team that has gotten themselves back to .500. And if you were to tell me that the Oilers through basically the full month of October would be .500 when it's all said and done, I would have said, yeah, that's probably where they should be. So maybe things evening themselves out a little bit.
At the risk of just combusting, blowing up right on the spot, is it not the same conversation we've been having about the Flames?
In what sense?
Good goaltending. might be misleading, outshot. Not four in a row or anything like that. There's certain things that have been different, you know, probably where they should be based on the effort that the Flames put forth at the end of last year. I'm just sitting back listening to you, and there's nothing that I disagree with, but it sure sounds an awful lot like the conversation we've been having about the Calgary Flames.
Yeah, it's pretty similar. They have relied too much on Ben Scrivens the last four games. The thing about Scrivens is I don't know if I think that the Oilers' goaltending is going to be able to hold up the same. I think maybe this is just because we're closer to it, mm-hmm. but I think I'd have more faith in Hiller and Ramo than I would in Scrivens and Foss. And right now, Foss isn't even playing. They've got Bachman backing up Scrivens right now.
Yeah, yeah.
But when Foss comes back, I still have more confidence in Hiller and Ramo than I do in Scrivens and Foss. I think there's more of a track record specifically with Hiller there. So good on Scrivens. He picks up his first shutout of the season last night, and he was very good. I just don't know if we're talking about really sustainable hockey for Edmonton.
Leon Draisaitl will stay in Edmonton. Is that a big surprise? I mean, that's not a deep team down the middle. He's a big body down the middle. I think he's looked okay. In many ways, he hasn't had the offensive success, but he kind of reminds me of Sean Monahan last year. On a team that needed some centermen, he gives them a big body.
I wonder if they make this decision if they don't win these four in a row. If maybe they go 1-3 over their last four, and October's looking the same way in 2014 as it did in 2013.
Very interesting question.
I wonder
if
they send Draisaitl back.
Very interesting question, because if they had gone 1-3, I think it's safe to say that panic mode, whatever you would have called, there would have been certainly conversations about who's going to be the coach and all of those things. All of that has died down. That was happening when they came off the road trip and they lost the first game at home. That was absolutely red hot. Not the case right now. I don't know. Is this a guy that could end up going down still after playing 10 games? Or are they committed now to keeping him up for the whole season?
If you burn year one of an entry-level deal, you almost have to, because it looks like a complete gaffe if you sent, like when the Sabres sent Grigorenko back to Quebec that one year, you're like, what are you doing?
Twice, haven't they?
I think they've done it twice. That's right. And didn't
Petrangelo went back too with St. Louis?
And he after playing 10 games?
No. Oh, sorry. No. I'm backwards on this. I'm talking about sending them back. No, you're right. Not after the 10 games.
Yeah. So
that's
once,
a completely different.
Once
idea.
You
yeah,
play
yeah,
him
yeah,
in
yeah,
that
yeah.
10th game, I mean, you're kind of locked into it.
Yeah.
And
Buffalo did send Grigorenko back. Petrangelo just never got to
Petrangelo never played the 10 games.
He was there and then got sent back.
No, he's going to play his 10th game.
Yeah,
there's no doubt about that.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
They're burning year one of his ELC tonight.
Yeah.
So I guess or tomorrow. Do they play tonight or tomorrow? Whenever they play their next game, Draisaitl's burning his first year of the ELC. So what is curious is, does that mean that he's sticking up all year? It better mean that he's sticking up all year.
But
if you play him in game 10, you have got to be 100% confident that he's good to go for the rest of the season.
But to your point, you know, if they hadn't run off the four in a row, so a week ago were they 100%, you know, what is it? Is it his play or is it the team's play, right? Because I don't know. I mean, I've watched a little bit of their games in the last week or so. I haven't seen a big uptick in Draisaitl's play. I think he's been okay. I think he's been a rookie out there, but they've won four in a row. So if all of a sudden you're deciding, we'll keep him because we won four in a row, that wouldn't be smart. Which goes, I go back.
No, I guess the reason I would say that is I wonder if they kept them, had they gone 1-3 and that storm was brewing again,
right.
Do you want to
keep
him in that environment?
Keep him out of it.
Insulate him and return
to the PA?
But
are they not 0-4 from getting back to that?
Yeah, maybe. Although they've clearly made their decision. They've clearly
100%.
Yeah,
100%.
I just wonder.
I think it's
knowing that pressure point is there with the 10 games. Had they been going in a downward spiral, then okay, let's you now that hasn't happened. Maybe it's not as toxic as they thought it was, or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
They've decided to keep him up. But again, if you're not 100% confident that Draisaitl is going to be able to handle the load of playing in the National Hockey League the next 72 games, you can't keep him up. So they obviously believe that because it is such a monumental mistake if you have to send a player back to junior after burning 1 year of his entry level.
I wonder about what the requirements are. I mean, last year Sean Monahan had to play a certain amount of minutes. And if you weren't going to play him, you know, whatever it was, 12-plus minutes a game, then he should go back to the Ontario Hockey League. I wonder if there's any requirements on Dallas, you know, Aikens to play Leon Draisaitl, if there's any, you know, caveats, does he have to be in the lineup, that sort of thing, constantly. They're just so thin down the middle that, you know, they almost have to keep him in a way.
Yeah, they do. And we kind of thought this was going to be the case right from the get-go. He looks body-wise like he's NHL ready. He looks like a guy who physically could be able to play 82 or a full season in the National Hockey League. So not surprising they've kept him up, all things considered. I wonder if things had really gone south, had they, because they sent Darnell Nurse back to Sault Ste. Marie, remember? I wonder if they would have thought about doing that with Draisaitl.
The LA Kings tonight will play against the Philadelphia Flyers, but they'll do so with only 19 dressed, only 17 skaters. Andrei Kopitar won't play tonight. He was hurt in the game against the Columbus Blue Jackets on the weekend. It has created a little bit of a cap crunch. You say to yourself, but Rob, why won't he play tonight? Well, Slavovoyanov remains suspended indefinitely. Thus, the LA Kings are $458,106 of cap space available. It's put them into a little bit of a bind. I will have Elliot Friedman on to explain it a little bit later, but also if you go to CapGeek, there is relief for the LA Kings, but not until the next game. They will qualify to be, I believe they want to bring up Jordan Wheel. They can do that in the next game. They can't do this tonight. I know that Dean Lombardi was in the media today and made some comments. I'm not sure if you had a chance to read them. Was talking a little bit about the, you know, the Slavovoyanov suspension that, you know, kind of made the comment that it was okay. You know, they understood the need to punish the player, but in this case, are they punishing the team? Whether or not, you know, that's right or not, he asked that question, called it a little bit of a political football, and then went on, it was Helene Elliott's column in the LA Times, went on to suggest that he, the general manager, needs to do a better job of educating the players on the off-ice issues, almost taking responsibility, not responsibility, but, you know, saying they had to do a better job of educating, you know, Voyanov and his teammates about those types of things so they didn't find themselves in these situations. Do you have a, you know, are you... particular now that this has happened, are you, do you have a feeling one way or the other, you know, in terms of the suspension, the indefinite suspension? I think we all kind of looked at it and cheered the National Hockey League at the time. We're about a week later, maybe a little over a week later. There have been stories about whether or not the wife actually, you know, thought that he should be charged, whether or not there was actually a crime here. There seems that happens. I think it becomes murky when these things happen. Do we have an issue with this right now?
I don't know. It's funny because we haven't talked about Semyon Varlamov's civil case being launched. Remember, his criminal case got thrown out.
Yep.
But Varlamov, the
just
girl,
happened yesterday.
Just happened yesterday. Yep. Launched a civil suit, and so you've got that going on while the Voinov thing is going on in Los Angeles, and so you wonder how. Do I think they'll play into one another? No, not legally. But I wonder if perception-wise things start to play into one another in that respect. So it's funny how things are going in Los Angeles. They look like a team that absolutely could repeat as Stanley Cup champions, yet that Voinov thing has the possibility, has the capability, not only on the ice, but overall distraction-wise, it has the potential of maybe derailing things a little bit. So you know, I wonder how Daryl Sutter and Dean Lombardi go about making sure that doesn't happen. It's not a desirable situation for the team. They obviously don't want this to be going on. So how do you insulate your group to make sure that the whole Voinov thing doesn't kind of hang over the team for the course of this?
I think Dean Lombardi's going down that path by heaping it upon himself, I think, by taking responsibility for it and saying he's got to do a better job. I think he's insulated
that way.
Yeah, I agree with that. But to my point, do you have a, you know, now that we've run into this situation where we're going to see a team play with only 17 skaters tonight, do you have a problem with the National Hockey League suspending Voinov indefinitely?
Not overly, no. I mean, for me...
Because I'm surprised by the number of people who do today. Well, that, you know, that's a little harsh. You know, I don't believe that. I don't think his number should count against the cap. I don't think it should impact the team that way. Whereas last week it was almost universally hailed as, you know, look at the National Hockey League leading the way. Post Ray Rice and Adrian Peterson, they've stepped in, and okay, I don't think they had much of a choice in it. But now here we are a week later, and there is a little bit, you know, there's some murkiness out there on all of this. I'm surprised by the number of people that have said, well, you know, this is too much. to me, they made the decision, they live with the decision, right? You make the decision at the time, you don't go, but if this starts to impact them in a bad way,
right,
we'll adjust it.
Yeah, what other ways around it could there be? Like, what could happen now? Like, could the NHL change their decision so that, you're right, so that it doesn't be as much of an impact on the LA Kings?
You know what I
can do? The Kings do anything? Like, off the top of my head, are the Kings?
They can't do anything tonight. If Trevor Lewis is apparently on the roster, but he's not healthy. Trevor Lewis was healthy, he could have gone into the lineup.
Right.
Okay. Because they're up against the cap, you know, it is what it is. Now, again, I can read it or I can send people to CapGeek, whatever you like. There is a function within the CBA, Article 50.10E, which deals with not this situation specifically, but an emergency recall, which this would be, you know, Jordan Wheel would be under that. But again, it specifically says that they have to go one game before the recall can occur. So they will be penalized one game. They'll be able to make the recall later on this week. Now, they may have Voyanov back. They may have Trevor Lewis back. All of those, you know, they may have everybody back by then. I was less concerned about that and more concerned about this. You know, everybody was very excited. Not excited, that's the wrong word. Very positive about the steps the NHL took last week. Very, you know, that was the right way to get out in front of it. And now this has happened, and I'm surprised by the number of people, both in just general conversations and things that I've seen online, going, well, maybe this is too much.
Yeah, I still think it was right to suspend them indefinitely. I mean, look, if you're going to, you know, take a hard line on this type of stuff, and if somebody's getting in legal trouble, that's going to impact their
right.
their work in the National Hockey League, then I think the NHL has done the right thing here.
Should the NHL have suspended him and then not counted him against the cap? Because they were taking the unprecedented, whatever you want to call it, they were taking the unusual step of indefinitely suspending a player. Most often the player knows, the team knows. We don't know. Should they have taken him off the cap? Should he have then gone to the team can suspend a player, right?
Well, that's what I'm wondering. Like, is that LA's recourse here? Could they not suspend Voinov? And then
I'm assuming they can't, or they would have done it, right? And I'm wondering if because one, you know, one happened before the other. I don't know. I'm hoping Elliot Friedman's going to be able to shed some light on this.
I was reading Elliot's Twitter today about the whole thing. It's just very fuzzy, the whole.
Yeah.
But does it change my opinion as to the NHL
I'm interested in because, you know, at the time, again, and heralded as a big step, as the right decision and everything, and now nobody saw this coming. Right. Nobody at the time. Everybody said, wow, it happened. They acted quickly. The fallout of Ray Rice, et cetera, et cetera. Nobody stood up and went, but what happens if they get an injury because they're tight against the cap? You know, and the other part of it that was not unprecedented, but, you know, you had Dean Lombardi and Daryl Sutter both coming out going, this is the right decision. You know, they didn't try and, you know, make an excuse or anything like that. They accepted the punishment. And here a week later, it's costing the LA Kings a player tonight.
Yeah. In the end,
it doesn't always happen that way.
In the end, it doesn't really change my opinion of what the NHL did. It doesn't.
Okay.
It just to me, I'm glad they went down that road. I think it's good that they made a swift statement.
Yep.
What else could the NHL have done other than take him off the cap right from the get-go?
I think that's about the only. I mean, the other thing they could have done is they could have just relented and went back to the precedent, which was the Varlamov case, which was do nothing. And I don't think they could. I just don't think they had the option to
right.
do that, considering, you know, what the world we live in these days.
Yeah.
I just don't think they had that option.
Yeah.
And as a result, you know, I guess the only function would be, you know, do you, to Dean Lombardi's point, do you punish the individual or do you punish the team? You know, if you punish the individual, then you suspend him indefinitely with pay or without whatever you want to say. But, you know, he doesn't count against your cap.
Yeah. The whole thing is quite complicated. And I don't know if there was a way around it necessarily or not. It doesn't seem like there was an immediate way around it right from the get-go. I
wouldn't, you know what, you could do this, you know, a similar situation could happen 10 times and this particular problem not happen. But it happened, and now what do you do? And
yeah.
The only function is, you know, not to make light, but I'll make light, You know, I remember when the Flames found themselves in salary cap hell, you know, with Mike Keenan. And then, what did they dress? Like nine forwards the one game, three lines?
That was
or
when John Nagrin played.
And I remember, you know, Keenan coming out and telling us, oh, this is the way it should be. You know, with all the TV timeouts, you only really need three lines and stuff like that, which was a big crock, really. Quite honestly, but it did remind me of that. Pat, what's coming up on Flames Warm Up?
6:10 this evening, Mark Bergevin, the general manager of the Montreal Canadiens, going to join us live here in studio. Looking forward to that conversation. Plus, we'll set up the Flames and the Montreal Canadiens. The Habs have not won here in Calgary since January 5th of 2002. It's been a long, long time since the Habs have won here in this building or in this city. They'll see if they can snap that streak. It's been a 7-game losing streak, all things considered, for Montreal here in Calgary.
Coming up in the 4 o'clock hour, Michael Grange from Sportsnet will join us at 4:25. We'll talk about the injury to Steve Nash that is likely going to end his career. Where does he fit on the Mount Rushmore of basketball players in this country? Not sure we've ever uttered that statement before. Also, the NBA season is just about to get going. Later on, Elliot Friedman, he'll come in and explain everything we need to know about the LA Kings suspension, because it is a little murky. Ryan Huska, Inside Hockey at 5 o'clock, the head coach of the Adirondack Flames, off to a tough start, 2-5-1. We'll get an assessment of some of the young players for Calgary. Derek Wills will join us at 5:25. Lots to talk about. The Flames making some lineup changes tonight. And we'll hear from the captain, Mark Giordano of the Calgary Flames, at 5:45. Lots to do this afternoon. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Proud to broadcast from Calgary, Alberta, Canada. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.